You're listening to Sappy Fest Radio, CHMA 106.9 FM, Sackville, New Brunswick. I'm your host, Stephen Lamke. It's a beautiful June 1st, Friday, and I have a very special guest in the studio with me, Sappy Fest President, Jessica Grew.
Hi, Steve. I'm here.
How are you?
I'm good. I feel like I kind of rolled in right at 11, but I had a busy morning.
Did you?
I did, yes.
You can tell me about your busy morning if you'd like.
Yeah, I sent a package of fabric to Ireland, and I had a big package of fabric sent to me from Ireland first thing this morning. So I had to sort all that out because they have a bank holiday on Monday. So
we should probably inform our...
Yes, our they don't know what I do.
Less informed listeners about why you'd be shipping fabric to and from Ireland.
On a Friday morning.
Or any time, really. Because I can honestly say that's something I've never done.
No, it's something I don't think many people in Canada have done. I make clothes for a living. I'm a fashion designer, and I do it out of my home studio in Sackville for almost 2 years. So some of you may be familiar. Some of you may not be.
Some of you who think you are unfamiliar may recognize the clothes, because they do walk around town,
yeah,
adorning our fellow citizens.
They do. I see them often when I go to Thunder and Lightning or when I'm walking up Bridge Street. I do get messages from friends in Halifax. They see people wearing them. My mom went to go see, is it Ed Sheeran? Ed Sheeran? That's bad that I don't know his name.
The pronunciation.
Pop star Ed. She went to go see him last summer in Quebec City.
Ed
yeah. With the red hair. And she saw someone wearing a ruffle top in Quebec City, in old Quebec City. She was very excited, made her trip. Or I think Ed did, but so did the ruffle top.
I think it's a fairly unique thing to be an independent clothing designer and maker.
Yeah.
At least in New Brunswick.
Yeah,
Sackville, New Brunswick. You're probably the only one in Sackville, New Brunswick.
I'm the only one in Sackville, New Brunswick. I'm not the only one in New Brunswick or even in Atlantic Canada, but there's a few and far between with us throughout Canada and the United States as well. Like, it's something that the past 5 years there's become more and more independent fashion designers, and it's pretty interesting, but it still is a very small pocket of people doing this work.
I would imagine at some point in the distant past, it would not have been so remarkable to know sort of personally the person that made your clothes.
No.
In today's era, mm-hmm. It is a unique thing.
Yeah. Well, the role of the seamstress, like starting with the Industrial Revolution, you know, there was the term sweated labor. I know I'm going really
That's okay. We have an hour.
You know, that factory labor by women was done for hundreds of years. And at the same time, though, up until a few generations ago, like the mid-20th century, you would go to a local dressmaker to have things made up, and you wouldn't buy ready-made clothes. So it is interesting. And it was a way, the sewing machine, when it was invented around 1850, was a way for women to work out of their houses, like in peace labor.
And I suppose it is primarily women, female. It's seen as a female industry.
Yeah, it is definitely. There's quite a bit of women in the trade, for
and,
sure.
And is that still the case? I'm asking from these questions from a point of almost near ignorance. You and I work together in Sappy Fest, and we are, I think it's safe to say, we're friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go on the
pretty
record
good friends.
On the air here.
Yeah,
but I will say, like, beyond what you tell me, and you normally will just tell me about the problems.
The day-to-day
problems. I know next to nothing about the industry.
Well, I went to school at Dalhousie University in the costume studies program, and it was mainly female student population, and many people go on to work in the film and theater industry afterwards. So they work under like IATSE. So they go on to do that, or they go on to do like, they work in like the textile restoration, like within museums, like, which is very interesting. Or they go on to work in production as production managers for fashion brands and so on and so forth. Yeah, but there would be quite a bit of...
I was going to ask how you feel about that gender divide, but as an aside, I wanted to say that I've learned through the course of my life that textile museums are like among the most fascinating things to go to if you're visiting like a different place or different culture.
Definitely, definitely. And it's something that I go to do. Like recently I was in Los Angeles and I ended up like, it's FIDAM. Like I didn't know the acronym when I got there. And they had like all of the, this year, like the Hollywood movies, like they had like Wonder Woman and like I, Tonya and like the one that, what's the name? They had everything. They had Dunkirk. They had all the costumes on these like really funny mannequins, like fashion mannequins, but you could like see all the work. And to me, like having been trained in costume as a costume technician, and we'd always, we would do great production like within our school and would always be seen like, oh, if you went on to work for these like production companies in Hollywood, the type of work you would be doing. And then I got to see some of it up close. Some of it was like spectacular and like, oh my goodness. And some of it was like, okay, yeah, like I could do this. And that was like pretty, just so fascinating.
Similarly, if you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, primarily what you see are stage outfits from Bowie or Mick Jagger or those kinds of things. You see, like they have instruments and sometimes they have like, you know, ephemera posters and album jackets, I suppose. I can't remember exactly, but mostly what you're looking at is clothes.
Yeah.
The clothes of these tiny little men that were the front people of these rock and roll bands.
There is someone that I went to school with. I don't know if she still does it, and I think it's on Vancouver Island, but she went on to like work and apprentice under someone who makes like, they're like the forefront of Elvis costume makers for like people
for
in Las Vegas. Yeah, for impersonators in Las Vegas area and beyond. Like, and those costumes are just like, and they do them accurately, because that's a thing. If people are into reproduction work in costume, and there's a huge like historical, like, you know, like LARPing, like role play culture,
sure,
it's got to be 100% accurate. So
you enter an industry or a school and you encounter the idea that the pinnacle is to go to Hollywood and make costumes, and instead for those people
I
right
didn't
now,
expect
Jessica,
all
give
these
a,
questions
a bit of a look but you've encountered this idea, but instead of pursuing something like that or the equivalent of that, you're in Sackville, New Brunswick, making your own clothes with your own label, Jessica Grew.
.ca and .com.
You have them both.
I have both domains.
Good. That's very wise. So you've chosen a completely different and much more independent path.
Yeah, I think that it's not uncommon to go on and like the pinnacles working at Hollywood. I would feel like you yourself, it would be like, oh, you become the biggest rock star you can become or something like that. But it's got to fit in with you. And I was raised about 70 kilometers from Zachville. It was a fluke that I ended back up here 3 years ago. But what I wanted to do, and I did go into school always wanting to do this, and just with the way that the internet has worked, it's become possible to really have a fashion brand out of your, like out of a remote area and not be in a location in Toronto, Montreal or New York. And that to me, like, if there's extra work to be done to make that happen, but there's the possibility of doing it, I was set to go.
So the possibility exists, but obviously the idea of doing that appeals to you in some way. So I'm trying to get to the real Jessica Grew.
Whoa.
Rather than just acknowledge that the internet facilitates certain business practices.
Well, I guess right now, like my setup is entirely in my home. I have a very interesting home that my friend Bucky Buckler kind of put together and renovated it. So I have this room that I do. I have a big old table and I cut all my fabric. And basically one of the spare bedrooms, like maybe 15 feet from where I sleep is where my sewing machine is. It's an industrial sewing machine. I purchased it. There's an amazing mechanic on the south shore of Nova Scotia. So it was through the old Settle and Seawinds factory, which is an amazing like 70s like fashion brand that was in Nova Scotia. But I think it's just for me getting down to it, I really enjoy sewing. I really enjoy making something. I really enjoy like the feeling that like how I put together a garment feels a bit different. But I do just enjoy the day-to-day process of sewing, I guess.
Which I think is incredibly significant that you are not just designing and marketing the clothes. You are hands-on making every single garment.
Every single garment. So sometimes when someone, you know, I almost kind of remember a lot of the garments. So when someone, like, I think that happened last night on Twitter, like with when you had posted this, it was Adrian Teacher, like, oh, but sure, Amanda was wearing one of my dresses, and that was a dress from like February 2007. And I, like, it was in the slate colored tencel twill. And I remember sending that out. So I was like, wow, like, she's wearing it right now. Like, that's a good sign for tomorrow.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, you just Adrian Teacher is who you're just referring to, and Adrian and Amanda have played here a number of times as Adrian Teacher and the subs, as Cool TV, as Apollo Ghosts. They've become a real, I would say, recognized part of our community. Yet they live in Vancouver, BC.
So far away.
They live so far away. And I would say with Sappy Fest, definitely like building those connections is one of our goals. One of our goals, and also one of like the just the best outcomes, you know, one of the measures of success would be that we have these friends and connections and sort of peers and what have you in Vancouver. Is there anything like with Jessica Grew Clothier. Is there what's your company name?
Oh, my company name is kind of a joke. I had to register it because I think I need like some sort of import export thing, and it couldn't just be under my name. So I was like, okay, I'll make it a joke. I'll make it Jessica Grew Clothes and Fashion.
There you go.
And now it's stuck. And now when I reach out to, you know, large mills or suppliers, and then I have to provide my business number, my business name, and it's like Clothes and Fashion. And they're like, what? That doesn't make, like, you know, like, wait, why? It's both of those things
why
in the name.
Why is it so long?
Why is it so long? Why is it like, yeah, like clothes and fashion. But I thought it was kind of funny because, you know, clothes can be clothes without fashion, and fashion can be fashion without clothes, and, you know, it's a little bit dialectical.
Well, I'm actually interested in that. This is not the line of questioning I meant to pursue here, but what is the difference between clothes and fashion, says the guy that's been wearing the same pair of jeans since you arrived in town?
I've been wearing this, well, and you know this because you've seen me most days, I've been wearing the same shirt for a few days in a row. I feel like fashion can exist in images, and it can exist in feelings evoked. Like, it doesn't need to be the actual physical object necessarily. And that is a big chunk of how like fashion as an industry or as an art functions. And sometimes clothes don't necessarily need to be fashion in themselves. I don't even...
So is fashion the idea and clothes is the embodiment?
No, because I think fashion is also, there is an embodiment in clothing. So I guess that's where it gets really like the dialectics of it. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I went to school for science and not for anything related to
went to school for physics.
Or like the arts.
Yeah.
So the term dialectic is one that I'm of course familiar with, but I actually have like, I do have to struggle with understanding what it means when people drop it into a casual conversation on the radio.
My partner is probably listening to this, who is like, I guess he's like a Marxist dialectical scholar. So, But I would say, without resorting to my phone, and there's probably quite a few people that are in undergrad laughing
at
this.
They're texting you right now.
They're texting me right now like, oh no, this might be permanently recorded.
Oh, someone's calling.
Someone is calling.
We're not allowed to take calls on the air.
Oh. What's the area code of that call?
It doesn't matter. Let's have our own conversation.
Okay.
I think it's unrelated.
So it's kind of like, as I view it, and you know, there's two opposing things that are also bound together, and in kind of going, I'm not going to get this right, but in a way, like almost in a search for truth, like you can pull, like it's almost like the one reveals itself as the other is kind of like negated in a way, or like, yeah.
This is dialectic.
Pretty much. Don't quote me on it.
You can tweet us.
I can look it up.
Stephen Lampkin.
Yeah. Yeah. Send me me on this, please.
With your simple definitions of dialectic. Dialectic reasoning.
Yeah. It's almost like things exist together and they can exist opposing, but they almost need to be that way for a true like way of knowing and seeing to come forward.
I mean, regardless of our understanding and misunderstanding of the term
I feel like
the distinction between fashion and clothes is interesting to me as a uninformed.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just this kind of like, oh, there's like high fashion on the runway and then there's like clothes in your dresser drawer. I think that usually we do view fashion, because of how the fashion industry runs, as something that you don't necessarily have access to. And I think that we all do have access to it. And I grew up in a village of 300 without any real, you know, like I wasn't in Milan or I wasn't in New York City, like walking around. But I grew up in a time where there was like it was the beginning of those like online fashion blogs and street style blogs. And I went to high school in Toronto, Nova Scotia, which has the best thrift shopping in the world, I think. And my friends or myself, like that's where I would go on my free blocks in school. I would go thrift shopping.
And why do you think the thrift shopping in Truro is so of such high grade?
It's high grade. So thrift shopping, secondhand clothing is like a really interesting like geographic like cycle, where a lot of like it's mainly like clothing comes from affluent areas of North America or even Europe. To less like affluent areas for people to purchase. So I think like typically like things could come from British Columbia to Atlantic Canada. The thrift stores in Truro, a lot of the merchandise came from New England, and people have like mapped out, even because there'll be different locations that the big bales of packed clothes come from. You would know because of the sports teams.
Yeah,
so if you were a certain sports fan, you could go to like this Cape Breton Frenchies for all your Miami Dolphins gear. Truro's thrift stores were mainly stocked by like Buffalo and other parts of New York.
So you got the Sabres or Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. And you just didn't know what you could find. When you were there.
So you get all the clothes from when Buffalo was a booming railroad.
Yeah, that doesn't fully make sense with what I just said, but because Buffalo definitely, like, we wouldn't be receiving, like, early 20th century Buffalo clothing.
Great Gatsby-esque.
But it did work that way. And when I was in Budapest before, and there was a lot of thrift shopping, and I went into a lot of thrift stores and markets, secondhand markets, and there would be, like, British flakes on everything, and it would be that the clothing is coming from England, where not necessarily like fashion brands that you can get in Hungary are there, and are there on discount, and are there on secondhand.
Okay, so sort of extending the question from talking about thrift stores, and I know you did study fashion, and I imagine there was a historical element to that education. So then the question is, today, when you're designing new clothes, your own clothes, mm-hmm. Jessica Grew, clothes and fashion, the new line.
Fashion and clothes.
How much of what you're doing is drawn from historical precedents or traditions? How much is created fresh from a blank slate or from a blank roll of linen, so to speak? Yeah,
I think there's a few things. Like, one thing would be that there is a bit of a constraint. I just have one straight stitch industrial machine, where something made even in a small garment factory, there'd be many specialized machinery. These machines can cost like tens of thousands of dollars. You can do really fancy things. You just kind of throw it through and it does, you know, the seam on your pants. So I have that constriction, which is really almost refreshing to work with when it comes to like what I can fully realize. Other than that, too, going back to thrift shopping, as someone who was always a thrift shopper, and most of my friends, most of my customers also thrift shoppers, there's those pieces that you can't find and you really, really, really just want them to manifest. You want, you know, a simple black top, and it's not, you know, you might find it in the right cut, but it's in this really, really awful 80s coral, because that's the one that's been discarded, you know, like the daughter keeps the mother's like really lovely one to like, and then the other one goes to the thrift store. So that's one thing. And then I have noticed that I've also in some ways looked back on my own family history, or just even the areas of the world they originated from before they lived here. And my great grandmother immigrated to Canada from Slovenia, and she was actually a seamstress. So she had made my grandmother's wedding dress, and she worked on a farm. She wasn't able to do what I do. She would be very, very, very excited if she knew that this was what I was doing, but she passed away when I was a child. But I do see myself like looking to like almost styles that she would have liked. Sure. Yeah. Or not intentionally, but then it just kind of goes there, which is interesting.
I think my last question maybe about along this line would be when you're making something, what is the life expectancy of that garment? Assuming it's going to be used in the way, you know, it's going to be worn.
Mm-hmm.
Do you imagine someone's granddaughter giving that to the thrift store in 100 years and it's still like a good and wearable garment?
That would be awesome. Clothes can wear out. They exist. But the idea that it is something like, it's a material object that is cherished and passed along, or even if it's just no longer needed and ended up at the thrift store, I would be overjoyed. And there is, like, there was a brand probably like the 70s, 80s called Sarah's Clothes that was based out of like Ottawa, Toronto. And when you find those pieces secondhand, they're beautiful. And previously I sold secondhand clothes even online before I did this, all over the world with my friend that is now usually my model, while we were in school. And we actually, there was someone named Sarah that we did sell Sarah's clothes to, because she collected them, because it was her mom's old roommate was Sarah's clothes.
Okay.
So it's so cool.
So do you have any idea of like how many of these garments would be out there, would have ever been made, I should say? Like how impossible is it to imagine like finding a Sarah's garment?
You actually, I have a few.
Is there tens of thousands?
They're probably maybe not tens of thousands, but I would say there could be thousands, there could be hundreds. I'm not sure. And it is interesting to think about that in terms of what I do. And then that really, once I pass along my work, like it's there, and it could end up in the garbage. Hopefully not, but it could end up on another continent. It could be lost and left someplace. Like, it's just kind of there. And it was kind of weird to think of that when I first started. And, you know, I have to do what I do. I have to, and I guess in a way, like, if you're a musician, people would listen to your music where you wouldn't expect it, or carry it with them, or form memories around it, like occasions that have happened where the music has been played, or when they've like attended a show. So in some ways it's connected to that.
Yeah. As much as music like is encoded in like a CD or an LP or, you know, a digital file on your phone, like the, like music is not the object though. The object's like a delivery system, you know? So it's a little different than like a clothing where like a piece of clothing where the thing you've made is that thing.
Yeah.
You know, if I write a song, the song is not the song on the record.
It's
like a much more abstracted connection.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. It's interesting because sometimes like I feel cranky because, the technical aspect of what I do, like I have to make sure, you know, they aren't just clothes in themselves. You don't hang them on the wall. Like they have to, you have to wear them and they have to fit you and they have to work and they have to fit on many people. But in a way it would be very hard to write music. I think even harder than
I think all things are hard.
Yeah.
We're about halfway through the show. I should remind our listeners that they are indeed listening to CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. This is Sappy Fest Radio. My name is Stephen Lampke, and my special guest today is Jessica Grew, president of Sappy Fest and president of Jessica Grew Clothing and Fashion. Are you a president of your own company?
Not yet. Okay. I think it's not.
You're an owner, proprietor.
Yeah.
I think we should maybe play a song.
Okay.
And do a couple PSAs.
Oh.
And then maybe we'll come back and talk about Sappy Fest.
All right. Yeah.
Or is there some summation that you would like to say about this conversation we just had? Anything we missed or skipped over?
I think that all of these things can be mixed together. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I think we'll just forge ahead. Yeah.
Do you have a musical request of any kind?
I don't know. I didn't get to.
That's okay. I was going to say we should listen to, well, I've got a bunch of really great stuff here lined up.
Okay.
Do you want to hear like, no, I'm just going to go for it. Let's listen to Hearing the Bass by Napeyes.
Oh.
Because our friend Danica wrote the lyrics to this one.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
Good friend.
And then we'll be back in a moment. That was U.S. Girls with Pearly Gates. You're listening to Sappy Fest Radio on CHMA 106.9 FM, Sackville, New Brunswick. Before that, we heard Hearing the Bass by Napeyes. My name's Stephen Lampke. I'm your creative director of Sappy Fest and Sappy Fest Radio. And my special guest today is Jessica Grew, Sappy Fest president and fashion designer. Ooh. Clothing designer? Which do you prefer?
Fashion designer, I guess.
Fashion designer. So during our musical break, we received...
I think we received it as I was talking and I had my phone flipped over. So
dialectic.
Shout out to Professor Jordy Miller.
Thank you, Dr. Miller.
He's taught many students dialectical theory in Sackville, New Brunswick.
And we are about to become two more students.
Two more students. He wrote, don't blow it. Two, like the okay hand symbols. Thought in motion. Every statement. This is it. Every statement contains its opposite. And
then
a little asterisk, idea.
What's that mean?
Oh, I think he means every statement contains its opposite idea.
Oh, it's opposite idea.
Yeah.
Or every idea contains its opposite.
Exactly. You got it right there.
Did I just dialectic?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a little unsure of the grammar. Maybe.
That's okay.
Maybe when after this... after Sappy Fest Radio, when we go down to Strutt's Gallery for their first of their seasonal community barbecues at noon, which we would encourage. Full attendance from the people of Sackville. Perhaps Jordy Miller, Dr. Jordy Miller, will be there and he can help me with the grammar.
Yeah, well, reasoning. We don't need to worry about the grammar. There's already too much gatekeeping and philosophy on that stuff.
No, but I'm a radio host and I would like to be able to speak... Well,
that's
true. Appropriately about it.
I do mispronounce quite a bit of my words. I can't pronounce profitable. Yeah, that's one I always, and it's very funny.
Meaning like the profits that you earn.
Profitable. I can't, there's a lot of words I can't
pronounce. The way you said it first, I thought you were referring to like prophecy.
Yeah.
Profitable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of many words.
Very profitable.
Yeah, I can't pronounce sweater.
You say sweater?
Yeah. My family has roasted me my whole life. Wow. So, yeah, I read very well, but I think I don't read words fully a lot, and I just really mash them, and I stopped caring. I turned 30 last week.
Happy birthday. I think you're speaking well on the airwaves today, Jessica. So thank you for coming in. We only have 10 or 15 minutes left, and I think we should talk about Sappy Fest a little bit because I think it's significant and important and that you are the president of Sappy Fest. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can give us a quick little history of how you came to this point.
Yeah. So I attended Sappy Fest for the first time as a 19-year-old.
11 years ago.
After my first year of university, I even remember getting my ID. I had just turned 19 specifically so that I didn't have a driver's license. I still don't. So I could come to Zachville in case I was ID'd that weekend to attend Sappy Fest. And that was the year you played at Sappy Fest as well. We didn't know each other, but
Constantine's I was there. Played at George's Roadhouse, Sappy Fest 2.
Yeah, Sunday night. Right?
That could be true. I don't remember which night it was.
Okay, Dog Day played on Sunday. I remember being there on Sunday night and being so tired. I got locked out of my residence room.
That Sunday night might have been Dog Day and Eric's trip.
Okay, actually, that's true.
Constantine's may have played Saturday night.
Okay.
This was before we had main stage on Bridge Street. This was before there was an outdoor stage in the afternoons besides Struts. Mm-hmm. But our big shows were at George's Roadhouse.
Yeah, and there was like the parking lot. You just said that the parking lot at Struts. Yeah. So I remember seeing Mount Erie play there. I remember like at night, like the Saturday night late at the Vogue. Maybe that's what I attended. Or Friday night, like Chad Van Galen played and...
Chad played at the Vogue that year.
Yeah,
okay.
And
I don't remember
the Got Ticket Got, Obichu, Rick White. That was a pretty good memory.
That is a good memory.
Yeah.
We'll have to fact check.
Yeah, fact check that at me.
So you attended an early Sappy Fest as quite a young person, and then you were living in Toronto at the time, in Halifax?
And then Halifax. I didn't come back to Sappy Fest until 2012, and I maybe was one of those people that was like, maybe Neil Young is coming. Maybe I should attend Sappy Fest that year.
There was a rumor that Neil Young was going to play. This was the year after Arcade Fire had done their secret show. And in the way that culture works and the artwork works, when something really works well and is wonderful, it expands what people think is possible. So Arcade Fire had played at the time probably one of the biggest, most exciting bands in the world, played at Sappy Fest. So that made people think anything was possible at Sappy Fest.
Even a 22-year-old girl working at Pete's Boutique Juice Bar, I took off the weekend. I had such a great weekend. I quit my job when I went back to Halifax.
And Neil Young did not play.
He did not. He did not attend.
And I don't want to suggest that it's not possible Neil Young could play Sappy Fest, because that would be against everything I just said about the expansion of the possible. But it was never in the plans or the reasonable realities that we exist in for Neil Young to have played Sappy Fest. But
you never know.
There was a wild rumor going
on. Yeah, well, and Sappy Fest had used, like, this is nowhere.
Everybody knows this
is
nowhere.
Yeah,
it's a famous Neil Young song.
I should have known that it was, couldn't have really.
I mean, everybody knows this is nowhere is a wonderful slogan for a music festival happening in Sackville, New Brunswick, against many odds, both financial and geographic.
Yes.
which continue to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Those obstacles. We are still a remotely located town, relatively, I should say, remotely. We're on the Trans-Canada Highway.
Luckily.
A lot of people pass through. But we're far away from Toronto and from Montreal and from many other places where our performers and audience come from.
Yeah. I feel like in some ways that it's a major, major obstacle. And one I came into knowing once I got involved after I moved to Sackville was Sappy Fest in 2015. So I've been a board member since then, and this is my first year as president. But it is an obstacle in a way. It's also not. I guess as we previously talked about, I do fashion in a place I'm technically not supposed to do if I want it to exist. And I think that it exists just fine where it is. And I think that especially those who have been at Sappy Fest and have attended Sappy Fest and been in Sackville that weekend, that it's a town where the entire main street shuts down. You're just here. It kind of feels like you're at adult summer camp. It feels like you've maybe stepped back a decade or two in some cases, for some people traveling from large cities. And, you know, like it's relaxing. It's where, so
the location becomes both in a dialectic sort of way, it becomes both an attribute as well as an obstacle.
Yeah, you know, often people will talk about, you know, we're bringing all like acts and culture to Sackville, New Brunswick, in doing Sappy Fest, but in a way too, it's like it's not people coming to visit us; it's also coming out from this town as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, and I think the program when we do that is, you know, musicians and artists from Sackville or from the greater region.
Like
it's significant. It's important that we're doing that, and like
And it becomes it becomes a place where artists that are from different geographic locations, they're here in this town, and it's a space to get to know one another, and it's a space to open for perhaps collaboration in the future, which we like have seen happen many times and is really like a beautiful thing that happens.
I have a really fundamental question that I'd
like
to ask you.
Yeah, you keep looking at the time like,
Well, I'm just trying to be a professional here. and you know, on community radio, we're both host and producers of these shows. So we have to, you know, keep
tabs on time. Something I'm not very good with.
So my question is, you've described what has happened at Sappy Fest. And what's been beautiful, rewarding, expansive about what has happened. My fundamental question is, why do we do it again?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we do it again this summer? Why do we do it again next year? Why?
Yeah.
At what point, or what is our thinking behind?
Yeah.
I'm asking you because you're our president and you're my guest this week.
Yeah.
But I'm asking myself this question all the time. And it's a question that, like, I'm eternally fascinated by, like, what is in that remounting of the festival? What is in that reoccurrence of this? With all its variations from year to year, but what, I'm not trying to ask what the essence of it is. I'm asking about the motivation. Why do we do it?
Yeah, I think it's something that, you know, before I was involved with the festival and I wasn't planning to be involved with the festival, I didn't know very much about festivals. And it was kind of like a festival is a festival is a festival. I didn't go to very many festivals, this and a few others. But now I know. And now that I'm in a leadership position, I'm very aware that it is an entirely community based effort in Sackville and very volunteer led. Most of us are in volunteer roles. We just have one creative director. So I think it's something that people in town enjoy so much. Like yesterday I walked an elderly lady's bags home, and when she found out what I did, she was like, how many bands are playing this year? And she's like, I always go down and like check it out. I was like, really? Awesome. But it's something that almost in a way it was pulled off, and so gratifying each year when it happens that you go back to it. And I feel like, you know, we have a large board of 9 organizers, and we have usually like 150 volunteers that are committed to helping out. And I think that, you know, when you do plan and lead something, you know, you need to know when, how much you can do, and mm-hmm. for how long you can do it. But I feel that there's a momentum in doing it. And yeah. In some ways, I think that we have been talking more and more about how we also let Sappy Fest, you know, it's year 13, 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Sappy Fest has gone through different phases, as it would, as life does, as yeah, you're human, and as it should, you reach yeah, different ages. So, yeah. So it's all about actually doing and doing the day-to-day production of it, and, you know, looking at the festival at hand that's happening August 3rd to 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And then also looking forward and looking at where it can go, and looking at how, you know, because the festival is something that's organized, and it's also something that through that organization has its own organic essence. So absolutely. We need to reflect on that. And I guess in a way we are kind of going back and to what we were talking about previously, but there's two motions almost. So mm-hmm. we, and with hearts in the right place, reflect on that as we go.
Definitely, like as when I stepped into this role last mm-hmm. year and to this day, like my thinking on it has led me to the belief that like Sappy Fest is not just the 3 days of of the festival this year, August 3rd to 5th, but Sappy Fest does not reside within me or within the board or mm-hmm. within, like, Sappy Fest is these conversations that we're having. It's people planning to come. It's about its relationships. It's the fact that we have friends in Vancouver, BC that mm-hmm. have played and stay in touch, and all of that stuff is Sappy Fest.
Yeah, and that we have a duty to each other, and that it is more, you know, and we don't have time to really touch on this or even touch on this when we talked about what I do, but, you know, when we talk, when people have conversations about, you know, the state of the fast fashion industry mm-hmm. and what I do as like independent or slow fashion, like, there, you know, there's so many different terms. I'm not going to take down huge, like, awful aspects and corporations sure. of the fast fashion industry on my own. It's going to be by many people doing what I do.
Yeah.
And in a way, Sappy Fest in year 13 and what it did 13 years ago and what it continues to do today allows similar events to take place in other locales. And together, that helps create a music, like a culture
mm-hmm.
and provide, you know, space for artists and musicians to perform at. And yeah, that's a magnificent thing. So yeah, it is something that doesn't, it resides in each of us, and it also doesn't, and it also mm-hmm. takes on a larger and like it's definitely political role.
I think inherently when you value the process as much as the outcome,
yeah,
you are participating in an anti-capitalist
mm-hmm.
Lifestyle, I'll say,
yeah.
or philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're describe, like, talking about your fashion your clothing line, like the way that you are approaching it, your business, and you're yeah. trying to.
I exist you in exist. Capitalism,
of course.
But at the same time, I'm attempt to, and I feel this way around what we do with Sappy Fest, to open up new space for
Absolutely.
Alternative or another method of doing things. And that's like an age old, like when we critique capitalism or current other modes of, you know, that are exploitative, you know, we critique, and then at the same time we have to build, like mm-hmm. rebuild
yeah.
forge something new. And that is also confusing, hard, but also like creative and interesting, and something that gives purpose,
mm-hmm.
actually, like I would say, to me as a person, gives me purpose to be living on the earth. So, you know, and I feel like there's many listeners right now that feel the same way, or are coming into feeling the same way.
Yeah.
I think that we're all really one conversation or one situation or one experience away from those kinds of feelings in general.
I think since we arrived at your purpose on earth, that's a very yeah, convenient place to wrap it up.
Yeah,
thank
noon.
You so much for coming in, Jessica.
Thank you.
Do you want to let our listeners know about your website and or Twitters or any of that kind of stuff? You're easy to find.
Yeah, I think would say that the best spot is my Instagram stories from feedback I've received from people. But yeah, you can find me online.
You're listening to Sappy Fest Radio on CHMA 106.9 FM. That was my special guest, Jessica Grew. Thank you again for coming in, Jessica. Any last musical requests as we say goodbye for today? Actually, can I just request my own?
Yeah, that's fine.
I was going to say that tentatively, at least, my guest next week will be Jennifer Castle.
Yeah.
So perhaps we'll go out with a Jennifer Castle song, and we can continue this conversation at Strutt's Barbecue down at the gallery. It's a beautiful day here in Sackville for a barbecue. Looking forward to seeing everybody at their first community barbecue of the summer.
Mm-hmm.